Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Alternative Blacks Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Washington, and shortly we will have with us Chris Kissinger to kick things off, who is the co-host of the show, obviously. So I'm going to allow time for people to get in, and then we'll start the conversation. But today we're going to be talking about baseball and blizzards. So let's get Chris on, and we'll get the show started.
What's up?
Still feeling it a little bit.
Man, I'm sorry to hear that. That's rough. How you been, though, besides, you know, like, dying?
Besides dying, I'm barely scraping by, and no. No, man, I haven't done shit since Friday, man, because I've just been, like, destroyed. So It's been a rough week, although I've been working since Tuesday, so.
Okay. So that's the nice thing about working from home. Well, maybe it isn't the nice thing about working from home, is that you could still work on the days that you're not feeling 100% and still kind of, you know, not have to take that day off. You're not feeling that great anyway, so there wasn't much you were going to do with that time anyway, so. Plus, you don't get any of your coworkers sick.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, if I, even just based on how I was feeling, there's no way if I was actually working in the office, I would actually go in this week, probably.
Right.
It might be the first day that I would think about it. You know, obviously, if COVID was a thing, you know, and we were actually in the office for some reason, I wouldn't go in, obviously, till I felt completely normal. And I did take a COVID test. Don't know what the results are yet.
Okay.
So, I'm feeling better, but, you know, still got this headache, man. I don't know what it is.
Damn. Oh, man, drinking the water?
Yeah. So, I don't have a beer tonight. I'm drinking good old water.
That's all right.
I hit my self-imposed caffeine limit with my coffee this morning, you know, so I'm on water.
All right, no, nothing wrong with that. I think that's a conversation we had.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Someone tried calling me during this, which was kind of annoying, but but now I think that's a conversation that we can have too, is like going out to have drinks with people or just like drinking in general in that culture, and then like when there's somebody who isn't consuming alcohol, how we like go about that as a culture, because I, especially in college, it was, you know, definitely looked down upon. So
yeah, it's that person.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, today I'm drinking a nice, a real light ale. You know, it's really, really filtered, as you can see.
Oof, man, that's almost clear.
But reverse osmosis filtered. It's 0%. It's a touch acidic, maybe. You know, they make different types everywhere you go. So, I give this a solid 5 right now.
Oh, word.
Mhm.
Nothing like that clear fresh. I am drinking.
Oh.
Trillium. Still had a couple Trilliums in the fridge, so had to grab the double dry hopped Fort Point pale ale. 6.6 from Trillium, Massachusetts. So, fire! It's amazing.
What up, Harry?
Okay.
Go.
So, before we get into anything else today, I think we should first and foremost fart point. Sorry, that was hairy. We should give a shout out to Oak Brook Brewing Company for having been the sponsor for as long as they were with us. You know, small businesses are hurting across the board, especially your small brewing companies. So that's what I would definitely say in regards to when you're out shopping for beer. If you're able to support small businesses, do that. I think Sheetz is going to be fine. It's like Rutter's will probably be fine. If you can, you know, Weiss will be fine. Go to your breweries. Go to your small mom and pops like Mary Six Pack to pick up like some six packs. Like, support craft beer in that capacity, because they are the ones that are going to be affected the most by the new regulations and everything like that. Not that I'm opposed to what needs to happen happening, but if you're going to go out and you're going to consume stuff, you know, support local. Think small. So that I just wanted to thank them before we got into thanking the Kickstarter. For anyone that's been paying attention, we did it. We fulfilled our first successful Kickstarter, because our camp. All right, I'm back. My neighbor's calling me.
That sounds like an issue.
It really is, because it's just like, I have to, I don't know, maybe I'll just, okay, I'm on airplane mode. There we go.
So I just started scrolling through the feed. Best Braft Crewery. Best craft brewery state, in your opinion?
Ooh, state? Wow.
That's we're super biased, for one, and we live in one of the best.
That's for it's sure. Like,
I feel like best isn't like a... Like, there's different good states for different types of beer, you know what I mean? Like, and it depends on your style, because obviously if you like West Coast IPAs, then California is your go-to. If you like... You know, if you like weird, crazy, experimental stuff, then there's a lot of good PA breweries that do that.
If you like your New England style, go into New England.
Go to Vermont. And, yeah. You know, if you want upper crusty stuff, you go to Vermont. It's kind of like.
So I think we have a very political answer. I don't think there is necessarily the best state. I would love to do that research and see if people have decided on what that is. PA, I think because of how big PA actually is and the variety, like when we started looking eastern part of PA, western part of PA, middle, when we started looking at PA, it was just outstanding how the variety.
California again with the calls.
Okay, so I'm doing a live after this at 8 o'clock, and the person with that just hit me up.
Oh man, you're a busy guy, huh?
I'm so stressed.
But SoCal is a great place. San Diego is like huge for craft beer. I'm missed all of that. Damn. Basically, Southern California is great because of San Diego, and I'm going with PA just because home team advantage.
Yeah, and you had a lot of, like, I think the homeschool advantage for PA is you had some really cool, like, throwback brewing company. So you had, like, your stouts. I mean, obviously, you have Yuengling. You have a lot of different, like, brewing companies that have been doing it for so long. It might have been more traditional, but they've been doing it for so long that once the craft beer craze came back around, you just had a lot of expertise in the area to piggyback off of and start going forward and such a, like, huge rush and with so much force. So I think that's why, you know, we're so aware of everything that's happening in PA, or we think we're aware of it and we've seen a lot of it happen, that it's just, it's great to get into. New York City has a shit ton of really good options. Florida.
You know what it is? Like, it's becoming, like, regional now. So, like, anywhere you go, there's going to be a scene. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times there are, like, there are just a few that are, like, upper crust that everyone wants to be, like when Pliny the Elder comes out, everyone is standing out, you know, out the door to get it.
You saw, you know? I got some the other night?
Yeah, I did.
Sorry. But,
places like that, it was Russian River, right?
Yeah.
Russian River or Trillium or
Treehouse.
And what's the other one? What's the other one from New Hampshire, is it? Or is that Farmstead or
there's a Farmstead, there's Allagash, but that's pretty, like, I think easy to come along.
Those are big name ones that, like, everyone wants to get to, but other than that, like, there's really so much volume at your local level.
And you know what, I was listening to Untapped's podcast Drinking Socially, and they were just talking about, you used to have these moments where there was that beer release of Trillium, or there was, you know, somebody was able to bring in Russian River. So you were standing in lines for, like, or even Heady Topper, which would be Alchemist.
Yeah.
But what's happened is, because there's so many craft breweries now, you don't have to, like, you don't have to be doing that. You don't have to really be standing out in line the whole time, because there is quality beer that you can find without having to break the bank and without having to wait forever.
Right. And it also kind of, I feel like it either forces those breweries to just make something seasonal and they'll bring it out once a year, like Trogues does a lot. Or they have to start making more of it because, yeah, a lot of people are going to show up for it, but they have a lot of competition now. So, you know, I think it's still such a big growing space that I think everyone would probably give their region that they live in or frequent the most as their favorite craft beer scene.
Right.
With what they've experienced the most. And there's good craft beer everywhere. You know, you just got to find it. And it's usually not hard.
That's for sure. So before getting too much further, one of the things I wanted to do, since there are people in here that did contribute to this, was I want to give a couple shout outs to people that helped us get our Kickstarter fulfilled. You know, we were saying, you know, we finally got a finished one. COVID got in the way the first time. But we finally finished one, and we were looking to get $700 to kind of enhance the listener experience, which was to essentially invest in equipment so that we can record audio a little better. Because right now when we're together, it's one mic and you can't really, like, do too much with just one mic. Obviously we've been doing it over a year with just one mic, but we want to do a little bit more. So we're going to be investing in a couple different mics, a soundboard. We're going to have our mixer, which we can finally, I was looking at it, it has six panels for like little soundboard stuff that I was looking for. Little, like, we finally get the I'm, like, really excited. We have to figure out what all of our, like, little samples are.
Nice.
But yeah, let's give these shout outs real quick. My neighbor from 4th Street, from New York, from Brooklyn, Poppy, Al's mom, she did that. Please stay. So you can play fart noise. No. Poppy donated. Kyle from Oakbrook donated. So, like, even though Oakbrook's not a sponsor of the show anymore, he's still contributing, and we do appreciate. My mom's friend Joan, my mom, Randy, Harry, who's in here, he gets a sticker. Lisa, who hosts, you know, Wonder of Ivy, and she has her own YouTube channel. So creatives supporting creatives. Kristen Boyd Edwards, you know, communications for Reading School District, is supporting Reading High grads. Love City Brewing Company in Philadelphia gave us some money, so I can't wait to get in contact with them and say thank you and give them a few shout outs. Dylan, he helped out. So before we started the Alternative Blacks, there was the Average Pod. And so that was my co-host from the Average Pod. Michael Fox and Eric's in here from the Hung Up Pod, the Hung Up Podcast, also supported us. So again, creatives supporting creatives. That's super amazing. I'm so excited for all of that.
Yeah, definitely. It's crazy to think that we were kind of able to do this, you know, that we have the support, especially when we tried it last. It wasn't even last year yet. It was the beginning of this year. This is just such a long year.
Yeah.
You know, when we were trying to get to Fresh Fest, which unfortunately didn't happen, you know, and we got that, like, that overwhelming support more than I think we thought we were going to get, at least initially. So, you know, it still continues to amaze me, the support that people are, you know, willing to give, and that, you know, just to see someone they know or their own, you know, be successful, or to help them any little bit that they can. It's great.
Yeah, and that's not even, like, the people we read were the people that donated, but there were so many people that were instrumental to just getting our voice out there, resharing, liking, commenting this the whole time, and we appreciate that as well, because that helped. We wouldn't be able to do that otherwise. So thank you guys for all of that, the support. It means a lot. Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you might add to it. I lost my train of thought.
You look like you just kind of like went out of there for a second.
Oh, no, I did. I definitely did.
Yeah, man, it's been a couple of weeks, you know. I completely agree with you.
It's been crazy. Wow. Yeah. Anyway, so tonight's conversation is about baseball and blizzards. So I think it's kind of, well, the blizzard part self explanatory, but the baseball part for people might not be, right? Because, I mean, you know, yeah. Why I'm bringing this up. What happened in the baseball world recently? Tyler needs a nap. Yes.
The Negro Leagues are finally recognized as on par with major leagues. It's been long overdue. And so now all of the historical statistics of all the Negro League players are official MLB, Major League Baseball statistics. This has the potential to change, like, a bunch of records, the record book, the way they're laid out and whatnot. I didn't read too much into that just yet. I did see an article on it, and I just didn't have time to read it. But, you know, this is huge, you know, as a round man might say. This is huge.
And
getting called again.
Oh, I thought your connection went off.
Oh,
that was me. I'm sorry. Am I back yet?
I can hear you, but I can't see you, so go ahead.
All right, cool. I'm trying to turn some Wi-Fi's off and whatnot, so we'll see what happens. I'm having the day. It's whatever.
You say you're trying to turn some waifus on?
Yeah, exactly. No, this is amazing. You know, we talk about Jackie Robinson and, you know, breaking the color barrier, but like, what did that actually mean? How much needed to happen even after he came in, and then not even recognizing all the stuff that was happening prior and not being able to recognize that. And the thing is too, what always kind of blew my mind when you start breaking this issue down further is there's a point with like MLB The Show or whatever, like All-Star Baseballs that you used to play, like on your PlayStation games and still play, there was a point where you could play with Negro League teams. And to me, that's the same thing when you speak on to collegiate like sports and, you know, these organizations profiting off of these people still. And I think that was always, you know, in the back of my head too. It's like, how are you going to have like two like these baseball games that have these players that you can play with when, you know, they're not even part of the official statistics and stuff like that. You know, the minor league teams that you can play with, that made sense because they're part of the like organizations and their affiliates. But then like you bring in, oh, here's the Negro Leagues, like look at these amazing stats that these guys have, and they would show these stats and they're like, but this doesn't count. Like when you would look at the list of the players and who did what, like you weren't factoring in your satchel pages, you weren't factoring in what was Willie Mays doing prior, you know, like that type of stuff.
And, you know, it's crazy because Jackie Robinson, as great of a person that he was, in, you know, the way that he transcended, you know, broke the color barrier and was that first person in that space, you know, not every person could have done that. He was a great player in the MLB when he was there. He was a really good player in the Negro Leagues when he was there. But the talent in the Negro Leagues, you know, Jackie Robinson wasn't the best player in the Negro League, so they just took the best player and no, he was just a really good player, and he caught the eye of someone who wanted to give him a chance. You know what I mean? I think he got lucky in that. I think his personality may have played a role into that as well. You know, there's a lot of things, but it's not talked about enough, the sheer talent that was in that league. I mean, Satchel Paige was, you know, if and the thing is, all these statistics are going to be in the record books and official, but that doesn't change public opinion from these old traditional guys. They're still going to look at those numbers and say, well, they weren't against us, they weren't against the MLB players, they don't count. So, you know, this is good, but once again, it's just like when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. He didn't break the color barrier, and then we go, "Yay, racism's over. Well done, well done, everyone.
Right.
Let's go home." You know, that's not how it worked. That's not how it ever worked. So this is just another step to add to the ladder, but you know, there's still way more to do. Because there's a lot of underlying things in the game of baseball today that you could attribute to racial institutions creating a mindset. And we could get into that on an episode because that's a really nuanced kind of argument that we could probably go for like 3 hours on.
Yeah, for sure. It's so interesting to talk about because we're looking at, yeah, the MLB did this, and you know a lot of people are so excited and want to congratulate them for doing this. But it's just like, yeah, now in 2020, oh, well, should we be congratulating the Major League, or should we be happy that it happened? But you know, also, it's kind of how many years later?
Yeah,
Like,
and Major League Baseball itself as an organization now isn't necessarily, you know, the best organization for its players. So it's not like, is it, you know, I mean, they're better standing next to the NFL and FIFA, but you know, that's a low bar.
it feels like they're doing this to cover, you know, some of the other stuff that's not going so well, to kind of, you know, be on the front lines of, like, not the front lines, but like to be in the same kind of news cycles with this Black Lives Matter movement and everything that's going on. It's just to kind of say, like, look how we're recognizing things that we didn't do so well in our past, and like, you see we're this great organization. So it becomes one of those, are you doing this with authenticity, or are you doing this for a PR stunt? So that's just where I'm at with it. I'm excited. It's going to be interesting because there's going to be a couple different like stats and records that are going to shift a little bit. I think overall looking through it, it's not overwhelmingly so, but it's an interesting conversation.
And what you know, what it does though is you go all the way back to the time, and you can say, well, at the time, this person at their time was an all-time leader, a league leader, whatever you want to call it. And that means something, I think, at least to some of these guys that might have been playing, you know.
So what I would like to see is I want to see what happens with these teams. Like, so when you're looking back, how are jerseys and how are, you know, memorabilia things now able to be sold? Does that come through Major League Baseball? In terms of, you know, when you go to different stadiums and stuff, maybe, I just don't know. It's like, these are the things that go on in the back of my head. And if so, if the Major League Baseball organization starts to be able to profit off of these old teams, what happens with that profits is up with those profits? Or is there an obligation to anybody like that? That's what goes on in the back of my head now. It's like, is there any type of compensation?
Just say, well, hey, now they're part of the major league history, so we have licensing rights over them, and then we can go this way and that way with it. Yeah, time will tell with that one. One thing that just popped into my mind that I don't remember. Have they been able to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, at all in any capacity, even if it was their own little section? I've been to Cooperstown. I just can't remember off the top of my head if that's something that happened before, because this would open the door to, you know, induct some of these great players into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame to be recognized as they should have been, you know, way back when. So that's positive that can come out of this. But you're right in terms of being pessimistic about this whole thing, because we've seen that, you know, we've seen sports leagues and administrations, that it's a money thing. It's always a money thing, or it's some kind of move to satiate someone's thirst for the sport to be played, usually because of money somewhere. So even if it's not directly coming to the MLB, you know, they might have a vested interest to make something in the future. Yeah. You know, we see all the time. It's like we were bitching about on our last live with King High. You know, it's the same kind of thing. NCAA, FIFA, you know, all of these are some of the most corrupt organizations in the world, really. FIFA's case, you know. So, yeah. So it, you know, nothing would surprise me anymore in terms of them using this as an opportunity.
Sorry, I just got excited. Someone popped in the chat. Things could get interesting very quickly now. No, you're absolutely right. I think there's always a sense of
pessimism.
Yeah, see, that's what I was going to say. It just didn't sound right in here. No, that this always exists when you see actions being taken in sports, especially, but politics, anything. When you see these type of things happening, I think Black America tends to like be excited And then after that initial like excitement about, oh, this is great, it's like, but why is this happening? Is this sincere? What does this actually mean going forward? And is this actually going to be helpful?
Right.
And so, I mean, I might have to read a little more. I think we should definitely do a fuller episode on this, maybe bring in some people from the Connect again, just to kind of go over some of these things and talk about what does this actually mean for the sports industry. I think they might have some valuable insight for that. So yeah. we'll connect with them.
Yeah. And then we'll do like the other half of the episode just on the Negro League itself. Talking about the history of the Negro League, because it's something that's a footnote in history, really, and it shouldn't be.
No, you're absolutely correct. I love that idea, so we'll definitely make that happen. On to the Blizzard!
On to the Blizzard. Blizzard of Hops?
Blizzard of Hops, yeah. I did my little mini promo.
Did you see that with a double Blizzard of Hops?
I didn't know that was a thing.
Getting distributed, like, this week, apparently. So by this time next week, well, probably like beginning of next week, it should be in the stores.
Oh, so this is new. Like it's
new. Yeah. Like they just canned it.
Well, if anybody here has a connection with Trogues and would like to hook the Alternative Blacks podcast up with this new release, we would love to do it. I just ended up following one of the owners of Trogues. I think he liked one of my pictures, so maybe I'll just slide into his DMs.
The Blizzard.
Right? Pop. Just Blizzard him with a bunch of messages. Hey, free beer.
Yeah, right. That'll work.
Right? So, I mean, we've, in our lifetime, gotten hit with a nice handful of, you know, big winter storms. You know, 96 was one of the earliest slight memory. People tell me about it more than I remember it.
I don't remember 96.
Yeah, we were three. It's
I might really remember snow, but...
Right. But I know 96 was huge. There was that one winter where Hung was visiting.
Wait, you skipped the one when we were in high school. There was a huge one when we were in high school. We were off school for like half a week.
Yeah.
And then where Hung was visiting.
Right. Harry remembers.
Pepper's Farming.
But then we got this one. And I think what makes this one so much different is the fact that kids are virtual right now. So there was a lot of districts that didn't give the kids snow days. There were some that did, and I actually applaud those districts because I think there's definitely something to be said for those type of snow days. But
I didn't get it.
I think what I wanted to discuss quickly, you know, we're already at 7:30. This is going to be a short episode.
Yeah, we can run it until you're comfortable.
Yeah. What's interesting is, in the virtual world, there's now this grace, I think, that wasn't afforded to us before. When we were kids, there was a snow day called, and that was it. Once it was called, there was no backtracking on that, right? But I think what's cool with this is you could backtrack on that. If the snow didn't hit the way that you were thinking initially, and it ends up just being rain for 2 days. Remember, we got off for rain a couple of times?
Yeah, but...
So
what is the last one to close?
That's true. But I think there's this balancing act, because in one hand, you lose summer, right? Imagine trying to convince kids in the summer virtually that, you know, they should stay inside and actually, like, do this thing. But on the flip side, I'm so conflicted with this, because it's just like, you can do class, but should you? So in one way, you can prevent school from going too far into the summer. But on the other hand, you're robbing kids of this like experience.
I feel like snow days should be considered for these kids right now.
Yeah.
more of a mental health check. I'm not saying like the thing, like, so education's important, but to what extent is it important, you know, for a young kid to be cooped up in the house all the time, you know, as they're developing, that's pretty detrimental, you know, as we are learning.
Mm-hmm.
So to give them the day, you know, to not just power through, you know, I think, you know, for people working from home, like myself, okay. Like we have business that we need to conduct, like, you know, real important business that we need to conduct, and I can do it from home. So it's not that big of a deal that, you know, I am working from home. You know what I mean?
Right.
The rules still apply, as they normally would, as far as at least the state's concerned. If you still report to a physical location to work, like, you were still getting called off for the snow. So that didn't change. It was only if you were working from home that you didn't get the snow. So, you know, I think the kids should get it. I think it would help with their mental health, especially with trying to normalize, you know, their situation a little bit, because they'll see the snow outside and their first inkling is, I'm not going to school today, it's a snow day. get on the computer, because, like, how productive is it really going to be? I think there's going to be a lot of distraction with that happening, because it's just not the same, it's just not the right setting, you know what I mean? I would just give the kids a day, give them a mental health day.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's one of those instances where you can hold off on the call a lot later. You don't have to make that call the night before, especially if you are still doing a completely virtual situation. So it doesn't have to be like, oh, we need to notify the buses. Like, the buses need to be in contact. We have to figure out all this stuff. Let's just call it because we don't know. I definitely think you're allowed to make more of a last minute like decision. But it's interesting. So last question I would pose in terms of the blizzard and the snow day and everything that comes with that would be then, it's a larger talking point, but I'll just throw the question up for an initial response, is in a work sense, you know, those individuals that have kids, you know, say you work in the same area that your kids go to school, but your kids have off, but your employer still wants you to come into work, right? Like, they decide that the snow's not something that they should, like, that they're worried about and that they're going to operate under normal business hours.
And you're forced to physically leave to go to work.
Right. Well, it was something that I was thinking about recently. I was just like, how is that justifiable, where we're saying it's not, like, the conditions aren't good enough to get kids in, but, you know, we're going to send their parents in. And now it becomes the question of, okay, what is the parents' responsibility? If both parents are, let's say both parents exist in this situation, right? And they're both expected to go to work. And now you have kids who could be as young as, what, 4 or 5?
Newborn. Right. Unless they're working a shit job that doesn't give leave for that.
Say that again?
I was going to say newborn, but I'm like, yeah. Well, they'd be able to get maternity leave, probably not paternity leave. But some, depending on what it is, you might not even get maternity leave. Like,
right.
You know.
I just wanted to pose that question, like, what your thoughts are in terms of how that should be handled.
This certainly isn't a new situation, because this happens all the time, every year.
Yeah.
When it comes to this thing. This is no different. I think it what happens is the parents have to use leave. It is a joke, Harry. It sure as hell is a joke. If you even get it, it's a joke. You get it, it's still a joke. So it is, and then that speaks to this point of. Whoa, Harry, we're trying to figure this out. Come on.
All right, we're going to wrap this up like in the next 4 minutes, because we don't want people starting to ask Harry these questions in the comments, because we saw what happened last time.
Asking him where he is. No, the thing is, it's going to end up coming down to the parent having to say, I can't come in because I have to take care of my child. So now it's a situation of, well, the parent has to take leave or they have to lose money. And which parent is going to lose the money here to stay home? You know, the logistics of that, it's just... Oh, you guys, man. So, you know, it all comes down to, if you have a child at home who's off school and you can't get, you know, someone to watch the child and care for the child while you're at work, then you need to, then companies shouldn't be able to force you to come in for something like that. There should be provisions somehow, whether that's like family medical leave or something. You know what I mean? It's got to, right. There's got to be something there, other than you're gonna lose money for that day.
Yeah, for sure.
Go ahead.
No, yeah, just I kind of was looking towards wrapping things up, so I'll allow you to jump back into your thought process. But it's so interesting. You know, we've been talking about mental health a lot during these particular times. And I think for me, it was, yeah, we're talking about mental health as it solely exists to a virtual world, but why are we not taking a deeper look and a deeper focus on the mental health crises or issues that were existing, continue to exist in workplace environments beyond schools? You know, we're talking about, oh, these kids need to be out of this virtual world, or they need to be able to play sports because of their mental health. And for me, it was always checking it back further. It was just like, how much stress do we put on the mental health of our students in the first place if it wasn't for this virtual world? Is this something that was being brought to the table ahead of time? Like, were we actually focusing on this the way that we needed to? What type of resources were available? Or did we just say the way that the school system currently exists is working, which is where I feel like we were. And then it continues on beyond that, because when we're talking about just even parental leave for employees, that comes down to a mental health element, for me at least, because that's going to be something that's on the mind this whole time, is how do you deal with this? How are we able to do all this? So it becomes, do you have a career, a life, or a family? I think becomes those three questions when you're looking at things. You're forced to choose, because the way our current society is built out is you could have a career and be very successful in your career, but you're going to give up on these other things. You can have, quote unquote, a life that exists where you get to travel, you get to do all these other things, but you can't really have the family the way you want to have the family because you need a career. But if you had the career, that, like, all these things don't tend to play well with each other the way our current system is built. And that's just my opinion.
No, you're completely correct, because it comes back to what Harry said. It's all about money. It's all about profit. And it's all about getting the most bang for your buck as a business. So you're going to work people long hours. So you can't have all three of those things, because you need money to have the family, to support the family. But what kind of, you know, mental support, you know, structural support are you going to be giving if you're never there because you always have to work? So it's like, it's that push and pull, you know, what is too much? And it's the same exact thing you just said with the education system, talking about sports and saying, you know, well, the mental health of these kids with the sports, but it's like, where are the mental health services really any other time? Now we're worried about mental health. How about real mental health, you know, services? How about real mental health help for kids? You know, how about a more robust program at your schools? And I do imply, Harry, that we shouldn't be in to make a profit at all costs. Now I might get shy. I gotta look over my shoulder.
Where's your job at?
Job, man. Listen. Ironically, government jobs don't work your ass off.
It's true.
It's very ironic, but it's true. Here I am.
No, but I do also, how can we purport to care about life when all we care about is whether this line keeps going up? Oof, yeah. Anyways, there's a lot that got brought up with just the simple idea of the blizzard. I know we had one more topic that we kind of wanted to tease, and I think it's going to be a very, very quick tease because I got to get going. I need some coffee before I jump on this next.
Yeah, man. I just wanted to, like, we had an environmental justice training kind of seminar thing because we have a Department of Environmental Justice. The issue is there's one state in the union that actually has laws for environmental justice.
Damn it, Harry.
At any rate, environmental justice, so they kind of went through and overlaid, like, redlining maps from back in the 50s, I believe, or 40s. Overlaid redlining maps, and then with areas of environmental impact that, you know, poor environmental impact from industry that was going on at the time. And of course, they looked exactly the same. So I found that very interesting because you talked about wanting to talk about redlining for a while, and here it is coming up, and you know, to think that redlining was done not only to put people in a certain area just to keep them away, or, you know, crowd them in this area that's not desirable. Well, why is it not desirable? Well, one of the reasons is it's not healthy to live there.
Right.
So push all them there and we'll go live in the healthy areas. So, you know, redlining is very sinister, and it needs its own episode of dedication to it, but it just it runs through every aspect of life, really. So just wanted to hit on that.
That's for sure. So thank you guys for tuning in. We will be hitting you guys with a couple new episodes before the year ends. One of those episodes will definitely be a just 2020 wrap up, a year in review, and then we're going to kind of do our own mini goal setting for what 2021 might look like for us. So so excited for these episodes. Thank you, Raven. I'm excited for what 2021 is going to bring. We're coming up on what, 2 years in March?
2 years in March.
Yeah, so we'll try to figure out something special. I think March 14th, right, is 2 years?
Something like that.
Yeah, who knows? Who cares? But we're so excited. We want to thank everybody who tuned in, who asked questions, who was commenting below, who just basically fucks with us. We thank you so much. And until next time.
Deuces. Quattros.